What happens when the world you've built your entire identity around simply ceases to exist? Scarlett O'Hara stands at the edge of her family's plantation, staring at fields stripped bare by war, and realizes that every rule she learned about being a lady means nothing when you're starving. This is where Gone with the Wind begins its brutal education, not with romance, but with survival. Margaret Mitchell's only novel captures something raw about human adaptability. When civilization collapses, we discover who we really are beneath our carefully constructed personas. Scarlett transforms from a pampered belle who couldn't dress herself into a woman who kills to protect her family, and that transformation reveals uncomfortable truths about what we're all capable of when necessity demands it. April 1861 gleams with confidence at the Wilkes Plantation. Young men in crisp uniforms boast about crushing Yankees within weeks. Scarlett, just 16, cares more about capturing Ashley Wilkes's attention than politics. She embodies the Old South's contradictions, her Irish father's fierce determination wrapped in her mother's refined manners. When she confesses her feelings to Ashley, his rejection stings. "Our natures are too different." He chooses Melanie Hamilton instead, seeking intellectual companionship over passion. Wounded, Scarlett accepts Charles Hamilton's proposal out of spite. Reality intrudes swiftly. Charles dies of pneumonia before seeing battle. The brief war stretches into years of grinding conflict. At 17, Scarlett becomes a widow with a baby she struggles to connect with, trapped by mourning customs that forbid dancing or flirting. Only Rhett Butler, the cynical blockade runner, sees through her widow's performance. He witnessed her outburst with Ashley and knows she's no demure Southern lady. Their relationship begins as a dance between two people who refuse to lie to each other, even when honesty cuts. Atlanta teems with contradictions. Patriotic rallies amid desperate shortages. Elegant balls as casualty lists grow. Scarlett escapes there to stay with Melanie and Aunt Pittypat, relieved to leave rural isolation. When Rhett scandalizes a fundraiser by bidding for a dance with the young widow, she accepts eagerly, reveling in movement and attention after months of forced mourning. Their strange friendship deepens. He appreciates her determination while mocking her hypocrisies, and she finds his lack of gentlemanly restraint refreshingly honest. As Sherman's army approaches, Atlanta transforms from confident stronghold to besieged city. Melanie's pregnancy coincides with the Union advance, trapping Scarlett when others flee. Labor begins just as Atlanta falls, and Scarlett must deliver the baby with only Prissy's incompetent help. Rhett drives them through burning streets in a stolen wagon, but at the city's edge abandons them to join the retreating army, despite his cynicism about the Confederacy. His parting confession of love only confuses Scarlett as she faces the dangerous journey to Tara alone. Tara shatters every illusion Scarlett carried from childhood. Union soldiers have looted the plantation, her mother Ellen has died of typhoid, and her father Gerald has lost his mind to grief. There's almost no food, and genteel rules mean nothing when you're starving. Scarlett plows fields with blistered hands, picks cotton alongside former slaves, and when a Union deserter threatens her family, she shoots him without hesitation and takes his gold. Standing in Tara's devastated fields, she makes her famous vow, "As God is my witness, I'm never going to be hungry again." This isn't dramatic posturing, it's a fundamental rewiring of her identity. Ashley returns from prison camp, broken and impractical, his gentlemanly values now liabilities. Scarlett still believes she loves him, but grows frustrated with his inability to adapt. Meanwhile, Will Benteen, a poor white farmer, becomes invaluable for his practical skills. The old hierarchies mean nothing, only the ability to work and adapt matters. Facing crushing taxes on Tara, Scarlett travels to Atlanta seeking money from imprisoned Rhett. She wears a dress fashioned from her mother's green velvet curtains, resourceful yet desperate, maintaining the illusion of prosperity despite work-roughened hands betraying the truth. When Rhett refuses, mockingly dissecting her amateur seduction, she manipulates Frank Kennedy, her sister's fiancé, into marriage by lying that Sue Ellen plans to marry someone else. This marks Scarlett's complete moral transformation. She feels no remorse about stealing her sister's fiancé or trapping a kind man she doesn't love. Tara's preservation justifies any transgression. She scandalizes Atlanta by running Frank's lumber business herself, selling to Yankees and carpetbaggers for substantial profits. When Frank dies during a Ku Klux Klan raid, necessitated by her reckless decision to drive through Shantytown alone, she's widowed again but financially independent. Rhett proposes shortly after Frank's funeral. Scarlett accepts without love, recognizing the advantages of his wealth and his understanding of her true nature. Their marriage represents a union founded on mutual recognition of flaws rather than romantic ideals. "We are so much alike, renegades both of us," Rhett tells Scarlett, and their marriage initially thrives on this recognition. He provides everything materially, a gaudy mansion, Parisian clothes, unlimited funds, yet maintains financial control, refusing to support her lumber business because it benefits Ashley. He understands her better than anyone, seeing the survivor beneath social pretenses. Yet she remains fixated on Ashley as her romantic ideal, a childhood fantasy preventing her from recognizing her true feelings for Rhett. Their daughter Bonnie Blue temporarily brings them closer. Rhett adores the child with surprising tenderness, seeing in her the opportunity for respectability. Through Bonnie, he rehabilitates his reputation, attending church, making political connections, deliberately distancing himself from his disreputable past. His devotion becomes almost obsessive, indulging her fear of darkness by keeping lights burning all night. But Scarlett's continued attachment to Ashley creates deepening rifts. When Rhett discovers she secretly supported Ashley's failing mill, he erupts. Men like Ashley don't know how to survive in this new world, so they go down underfoot. The balance shatters when India Wilkes discovers Scarlett embracing Ashley, an innocent moment misconstrued as proof of long-suspected infidelity. As Melanie dies, her final words, "He loves you so," plant seeds of understanding in Scarlett. Seeking comfort from Ashley, she finally sees him clearly. "Diminished, lost, a child, more frightened, running to me." She realizes she never loved Ashley, only something I made up, something that's just as dead as Melly is. Walking home through misty streets, Scarlett recognizes her recurring nightmare's landscape. She suddenly understands what she's been seeking. Home, Rhett. The safety she's craved has always been with him. But her revelation comes too late. Rhett listens with tired indifference. That kind of love wears out. He delivers his famous line, "My dear, I don't give a damn," and leaves for Charleston. Scarlett determines to win him back, drawing strength from Tara. "Tomorrow, I'll think of some way to get him back. After all, tomorrow is another day." This isn't naive optimism. It's the survival instinct that carried her through war and starvation. Scarlett O'Hara shows us what we become when everything burns away. Survival requires shedding beautiful illusions about love, ourselves, and what we can endure. Her story isn't about romance or war. It's about the brutal honesty required when our worlds collapse. Tomorrow always comes, bringing another chance to rebuild.